in my kitchen. There's a turkey running out the door.
Come over here, kid. Why, son? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
You want some more?
Delicious. That's the sound of Miramar Estate. Let's see, Miramar Estate, 2008, Don Miguel Vineyard, earthquake block, going into the glass, and it is a bribe. I asked our guest to be here this evening and said, you know, I know it's short notice, but I'll bring wine, and he thought that was a good idea. So there we go, and I will tell you who our guests are in just a minute, but I'm going to pass out this wine. And, you know, Mouthful's been going on now for 16 years. And one of the things I've always wanted to do and just have never quite gotten to it is to feature a wine each week. So maybe we're starting that. Miramar Estate is, of course, out in Green Valley. Off of, you just drive out Grayton Road and you get there and you notice go around a big curve, and if you look up on the hill, you notice these. I think there's at least two huge sculptures by Patrick Amiot. I think it's Amiot, of dogs. Miramar loves her dogs. Anyway, it's a great place to visit, and she makes absolutely beautiful Pinot Noir. And she's also one of the two winemakers in West County that are doing a very nice job of unoaked Chardonnay. I am not a fan at all of California-style Chardonnay, but the one that without oak that Iron Horse Vineyards makes, and then Miramar Estate unoaked Chardonnay. Those are really quite lovely wines. So welcome to Mouthful.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.
It is Mark Felton and Sarah Silva of Felton Acres, a farm in Sebastopol. Okay, I was wondering if the address, because you're right there near Cotati, right?
Yeah, it's definitely south part of.
Okay, and I got to get you a little closer.
472.
Okay, and you are, I saw you at the farmer's market, I think it was last Sunday. I'd been hearing about you and knew about your stuff, but hadn't quite made contact. So it's really great to see you at the market, and you're going to be at other markets. And I know, you know, so if you want to, while you're listening to Mouthful, if you're near your computer, even listening on your computer, you can go to the website and look at things. I think it's a really efficient website. It gives you the information you want. You don't have to hunt around. It's feltonacres.com. So you're going to be at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market. You're going to be at Redwood Empire. And then you're going to be at the Sebastopol Farmers Market on the first and third Sundays. And then you have a farm open house on the second and fourth Sundays.
That's correct. We've just finally got to the point where we can actually open our farm to the public and invite people to come in and see exactly how we create this.
And you did that today, right?
That's right.
How was it?
It was fabulous. In fact, we had a new surprise lamb, 1 day old, mm-hmm. that kids got to hold. And so that was a special treat.
It was perfect.
It was a good trade for the kind of lousy weather we got.
I loved the weather today. I felt bad because I was thinking, oh, it's not hot. People at the Sebastopol market were absolutely freezing. Nancy Skoll was just shivering. But after dancing for 2 hours in the heat of the day yesterday down in Novato and nearly getting sunstroke, I thought, oh, a reprieve. But so you had a lot of visitors. And were the people who came today, are they people who know you and subscribe? Is it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I should have said subscribe. You don't do a CSA, do you?
We do not.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we do a CSA. Oh, so we do have a subscription program.
Oh, you do?
Sort. It's not the traditional CSA. Uh-huh. But we have a monthly egg buying program.
Oh, monthly egg. CSA. Oh, how interesting. Oh, yeah. How cool.
So, yeah. So we do have, but those people are the people who come on our Thursday event, which is every Thursday, 12 to 2 at O'Reilly Media parking lot, a truck in Thursdays.
Oh, so you go.
We do that every week. Downtown,
so you're there for people to pick up their
anything
eggs,
they want. Mm-hmm.
And then do you have your other products?
Yes, we do.
Cool.
We have a truck that can keep everything frozen the entire time, and so we're always there with bacon and chicken and lamb and goat.
Uh-huh. So you're basically shopping.
Really? Yeah, that's a great another option. I do less and less at supermarkets. You know, I can go for a month. Or actually, a lot more. About the only time I absolutely have to go to the grocery store is when I run out of Diamond Crystal kosher salt. So it's like, okay, I got to go to the grocery store. But, oh, so that's really good to know. So let's back up and talk about the start of Felton Acres. First, what road are you on?
We're on Blank Road.
Oh, Blank Road, okay.
So when we say south part of Sebastopol,
yes,
it really is.
Absolutely, I know it well.
The north part of the Petaluma Gap weather pattern there.
Right.
So we get the wind. Mm-hmm. But it's great grazing land, and we're on 23 acres there. It was an old horse property, so we have three very nice animal shelters that our animals appreciate, and just a lot of green grass pasture. And it's really perfect for our operation.
How long have you been there?
About 18 months.
So really new.
Yes. Before that, we were leasing land in a variety of places.
Uh-huh. Well, congratulations.
Thank
Landed
you.
Now.
Exactly.
And Sarah, you're the farm manager? And have you been there the 18 months as well?
No. Actually, Mark and I had two separate farms that were working pretty much parallel to each other up until about last November. And now we are, you know, we've got the combined farms on the property. And he is, in a sense, is manufacturing my old label. And so everything's in the Felton Acres name. And
So we
had two farms, and we actually put them into one just recently. So we grew significantly in November, each of us. So, you know, we had two separate everything, which was really silly because we had been doing it for so long together.
We divided the market, even though we were in the same town, by focusing on a different feed type and different breeds.
We were both in Sebastopol. We even farmed on the same land at times together.
Right, we shared a lease.
Okay, and
in
what,
two different
what
properties
area of Sebastopol?
The lease that we shared was behind the Rosenthorn gift shop on Bodega.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah. Carol and John have been great for us. You know, they really helped us get started in many ways. You know, because we didn't have large pieces of land at that time. Each of us had small 2 to 3 acre plots, you know, which is where we started in apple orchards. You know, that was sort of our original concept is, you know, farming chickens under the apple orchards, you know, although I had blackberries too. So I always knew I had to have something to eat the blackberries.
There you go.
So, you know, then came the sheep to mow the grass to the right height for the meat chickens. And Sarah had goats because she wanted to clear brows out of the way. And when we realized we're really doing the same thing in the same marketplace, she moved in the direction of soy-free when Modesto Milling came out with a soy-free feed, and she went with the slower-growing European broiler,
so
the Freedom Ranger.
Right.
And I was going to, you know, be a dollar or so cheaper and do, you know, organic feed with soy in it and have the Cornish cross, the standard commercial breed.
So that's what last year was.
And now you do have both the Cornish cross and the soy-free Freedom Ranger. I cooked a soy-free Freedom Ranger on Monday.
How'd you like it?
I loved it. You know, I've never, ever cared for breast meat.
Yeah.
You know, I just...
Me either. I've always been the dark meat kind
dark
of person.
Meat. From the time I was a little kid, you know, at Thanksgiving. It was great. My entire family preferred white meat.
Yep.
It's like, cool, give me the thigh.
Yep, that's exactly how it always worked out for me, too.
Yeah, and then the more I've learned about, especially the, you know, commercial Cornish cross, that's a real tragedy. So I was really happy to see that, and the soy-free was really interesting as well. Anyway, I roasted it very hot. Mm-hmm. I roasted it at 425 degrees for 25 minutes, put it under a little, actually not a tent of foil. I turned a wok on top of it.
Perfect.
After I took it out of the oven for about 5 or 10 minutes while I was getting everything else ready. And it was perfect and very satisfying. And that's one of the things I always like to talk about with people. I get so tired of hearing, oh, you know, you can't shop at the farmer's market because it's so expensive. And it's like, it's really not. Once you sort of make that shift to cooking differently, you're much more satisfied, you mm-hmm. know, with, I don't, you know, I'm not the sort to like do a deep nutritional scientific analysis, but I just know that food like that and that chicken was just so satisfying.
Nutritionally dense.
Yeah, exactly. And my grandson, who has an incredible palate, he loved it. Neither one of us ate that much, and I had it for 3 more meals.
Perfect.
And now I'm making stock from the carcass. So it was really quite good, really good. And
well, thank you.
That 25 minutes at 425 degrees was absolutely perfect. Even the breast, and this, you know, for someone who doesn't really care for the white meat, the breast meat, I made chicken salad out of it.
Cool.
And it was quite good and juicy, succulent, not at all dry.
We were both inspired by Joel Salatin, the
yes.
polyface farmer out
sure.
in West Virginia, and we still do exactly his method without modification. We move the meat birds every single day
yeah,
to a new patch.
Let's talk about that. They're chicken,
right.
they're chicken
right. which is
doctors.
So
yes. So that's a term coined by Bill Mollison, the father of permaculture, and it just means a chicken pen that moves.
Right.
With no bottom.
Right.
So, right. So they're on grass.
On the pasture.
Right.
There's,
on pasture. Right.
There's no diesel engine. It just means that the chicken pen moves and,
right.
and that they actually have access to the dirt and to uh-huh. the grass. And, you know, even the Freedom Ranger, it's a hybrid broiler. They're not the most active birds in the way a laying hen would be. They won't go 300 feet from their feeder. So the trick is to, you know, push them every day onto a new piece of forage. And the minute you move the tractor to its new grass, the chickens are going crazy eating that stuff. And,
uh-huh.
and you know, that's where the omega-3s come from. And that's where the greater depth of flavor comes from as well.
Uh-huh. How big is it?
Well, we still use the exact same shape that okay. Joel Salatin, uh-huh. you know, perfected. It's 10 feet wide by 12 feet long mm-hmm. and 2 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
how many birds?
80 birds.
80 birds.
So in a given day, they don't have that many square feet per animal, but over the entire lifetime of the chicken, it's far more square feet per bird than any industrial operation
sure.
has. And, you know, because of the genetics
well,
of these...
chicks, it keeps them safe, you know.
Yeah, I was
people don't
ask
think about that.
That
you know,
that's what I was wondering about was the safety.
Chickens are quite vulnerable to
sure.
predators, everything, and everybody loves chicken.
Oh, I live next door. you know, so many people are putting in, you know, little home fox, and mm-hmm. I haven't, but and I only have one neighbor. I live out in the country, and they had the most beautiful birds, and they would come over and see me during the day and run through my garden, and something killed them.
Yeah,
Rocky Raccoon keeps our egg business alive.
Just slaughtered them, and then slaughtered some others afterwards, and we think it was a dog in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So now they have a pretty big pen, you know, their pen is enclosed and it's pretty big. And Amy and Leslie, who live there with their daughter, Kelsey, they're out there with sticks when they let them run free, but they only let them run free while they're out there with them. And they have sticks in case the dog comes near. But chickens are really, that's why I don't have them, because I'm one person and I cannot build a chicken coop on my own. But I also know I would, you know, I would be really devastated if I had to walk outside and deal with
it's dead, horrible dead losing your first chicken.
Yeah.
That was the most devastating chicken I ever lost.
Yeah. I had Ophelia. I had a chicken who lived with a flock up in Forestville. Beautiful barred Cochin.
Mm.
beautiful. She picked me out when she was 3 days old. I was looking, and then she quickly jumped into my hand and then nestled in my cleavage. Aww. And I would go visit her, and she was the first chicken in this flock killed.
Oh, that's horrible.
So it was just awful to lose her.
I learned not to name the birds from Ginger when I went out. It was one of these ginger-colored Americanas, beautiful mm-hmm. bird. And one day, Ginger, where's your head?
Oh. Yeah, we had a beautiful blonde, God, what breed was she? She wasn't an Americana, but she was that ginger color, and we named her Gilda after the movie with Rita Hayworth, Gilda. And she's in chicken heaven now, too. So, yeah, they're vulnerable, so that top mm-hmm. part is...
Well, especially for the meat birds.
The meat birds, because they're young.
Slow, yeah, and they're
yeah.
small.
Right.
When, uh-huh. you know, when they come out of the brooder at 3 weeks old, they're perfect for a Cooper's hawk. They, mm-hmm. The Cooper's hawk is a bird specialist.
Yes.
And they'll come, and once they key in on them, then they want to repeat
they want,
that
sure.
lovely experience.
Dinner.
Yeah.
Let's go to the chicken cafe tonight.
Our laying chickens have a much different style.
Uh-huh.
We have flatbed trailers, you know, with 2 to 3 axles, and you know, between 100 and 350 birds, depending on the size in each one. And these we protect with the electric net fences.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no top on those.
Uh-huh.
But we keep roosters who, you know, their role is to keep a watchful eye out. And
sure.
they'll give an alarm call if anything flies over. And those hens, when they hear the rooster alarm, and become aware of the hawk attack,
mm-hmm.
can pretty well get away.
Yeah, cool. How many laying hens do you have?
We're saying around 1,500 lately. But
we actually have 1,000 on pasture right now.
Wow.
1,500
so
in a few months.
Pretty ambitious operation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, I mean, we're trying to both provide directly to the consumer, but uh-huh. also... You know, I mean, I have a mother of 3 children in my household.
Uh-huh.
She wants to shop at a supermarket, so we're trying to provide that convenience as well.
Uh-huh. And I know your eggs are at Andy's. Where else? Let's see, Andy's, Whole Foods, Bohemian Market in Occidental, and Bill's Farm Basket in Sebastopol.
Correct.
And do you do any direct to restaurant sales?
Yep. Yeah, we're in John Ash and uh-huh. Peter Lowell's in Sebastopol.
Mm-hmm.
And Chez Panisse.
Okay, you are in Chez Panisse. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Applewood. And Mateo's, uh-huh. Cucina Latina.
Uh-huh.
That's for meat. I don't think those are egg buyers.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Fork is an egg buyer.
Oh,
Fork
French
Catering.
Garden.
And French Garden.
French
mm-hmm.
Garden
uh-huh.
is an egg buyer.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool. Right. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back with more talk about chickens, eggs, and more.
What you hear on KRCB is patchwork programming, squares of time devoted to a kaleidoscope of music and talk. But I don't think of KRCB as a patchwork quilt. To me, it's a candy store. There's Freight Train Boogies, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Jazz Connections Nut Clusters, Radio Free Sonoma's Zots, Pillow Storm's Pop Rocks, Holy Cow's Goody Gumdrops, Lady Spin's The Blues Molasses Taffy, Performance Today's Pettifors, Living Proof's Dove Milk Chocolate Hearts, Red Shoes Rodeo is a Licorice Whip, Mouthful a Lollipop, Rhythm and Roots a Sugar Daddy, Beyond and Back Black Licorice, Our Roots are Showing a Peanut-Filled Caramel, This American Life's Obviously Cracker Jacks. You can ensure your candy store will always be open at 707-584-2020 or krcb.org/donate. It's KRCB, keeping the lick in public radio.
And the lovely day is through, then with longing I recall the years I spent with you. Mamma, solo per te la mia canzone. Sarai con me tu nom, sarai.
It's mouthful, and yes, it is Mother's Day, isn't it? Hope you've had a good day. Hope you made it to a farmer's market. Sebastopol Farmer's Market was really nice today. The first zucchini, the first cherries, my first taste of a peach and of a nectarine. So, the season is unfolding. It's like, hurry with the favas right now. It's like, God, if you don't have favas in another couple of weeks, they're probably going to be too big and... They get sort of mealy once they start to turn and, you know, get closer to their dried bean state. So now is the time to enjoy favas before it's too late. Anyway, we are talking with Mark Felton and Sarah Silva of Felton Acres in Southwest Sebastopol.
East, maybe, huh?
Southeast. You're right. I'm upside down. I'm usually very good at directions, but I've been upside down all day. So you have... chicken, pork, lamb, goat, is that right? And eggs.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about chicken feed for meat birds. And I think people don't know a whole lot about this. And it's interesting that you're saying, instinctively, it's like, yes, soy free. Why is that cool? Why is that a good thing?
Well, I think the thing that people are just starting to realize is that they don't know is soy is in everything.
Yeah, and it's mostly GMO soy, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of the largest GMO crops.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if it's a GMO or it doesn't matter if it's conventional or organic. Soy is the primary protein in many things and soy lectins and everything. So people are just starting to realize that soy is actually in all animal feeds. And so those people who are trying to stay away from soy for whatever reason, for health concerns, environmental concerns, now are starting to realize that, you know, there's actually a choice You know, our animals don't have to be fed soy too, because we do believe in you are what you eat eats. You know, so there are some studies, not very in-depth studies yet, that have actually shown that these things that the soy product actually passes on, which is the phytoestrogens, are actually passing on through the meats and eggs and the milks.
Interesting.
You know, and there's anecdotal evidence, you know, in many cases that these things are harming people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had thyroid problems because of too much soy milk when I was in 25. So that was an issue for me.
That's been one of the real, from what I've read, that's been one of the concerns about younger people developing thyroid cancer.
Right.
And my daughter had thyroid cancer. And I've known several other young people. This was something that only people who were exposed to radiation, you know, maybe their dads worked at a place that exposed them to radiation. But suddenly there's been this huge increase. And the specialist down at Stanford told us that, you know, no one will say this, but it has to be environmental.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting. You know, really good place, if you want to follow up with reading more about soy, Weston A. Price Foundation, they almost serve as a clearinghouse for information about soy.
Right.
They've just been a great source for worldwide soy studies. So if you want more information on that, and I really highly recommend it, that's really good. And it's great to know we have that alternative now.
It's relatively new,
right?
Because protein is extremely important for a bird that lays as many eggs as a modern, you know, egg layer does.
Yeah.
And you can't go to fish meal because a lot of fisheries aren't very sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what is that going to make the flavor of the egg like?
Or even the meat.
So,
I've heard reports of the meat tasting different.
Sure. I mean, I would think that whatever went into them would influence.
Yeah.
How they tasted.
Our feed provider, Modesto Milling, uses peas and sesame seeds to replace that protein component of the feed. And I've heard good and bad things about different soy-free feeds, but our experience has been Modesto Milling's is very good.
Our
chickens are performing quite well. On it.
Mm-hmm. Surprisingly well, I'd say. I mean, considering that our domestic laying hen has been, you know, I don't know, I guess you would say the hybrids that exist, you know, they've been grown up on these soy feeds for many generations now, so their bodies are pretty used to it, you know.
Yeah.
And the Cornish actually don't do so well on
soy
free. Soy-free.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we raise the Freedom Ranger on a soy free feed, that they seem to handle it much better.
What happens when you say they don't do so well?
They're slower.
They don't thrive.
They don't grow as quickly.
They grow more like a laying hen would, frankly. You know, the meat birds grow pretty quickly. People don't realize that what the chicken they get in the store is actually a quite young chicken. Most meats are
like
5 to 6 weeks old.
Yeah,
I mean, the meat you get in the stores from all animals, it's actually young meat.
Uh-huh.
We're used to the more tender meats is from a younger animal.
I would say
these are chicks, you know. They're younger. They're adolescents.
Uh-huh.
Same with the pig and, you know, same with the lamb.
Right.
Lambs are not really, don't look like lambs quite much anymore when you harvest them.
Right, no, they look like sheep. They look like small sheep.
That scares people sometimes when you say you're eating lamb. They picture a two-day-old lamb,
right.
You know, and, you know, it's a young animal, but it's not a baby.
Yeah.
It's not like a veal calf, for example.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the Cornish cross, partly with comparison. At what point are they harvested? At what age?
Well, it depends on who we're harvesting them for. If the restaurant wants a 2-pound bird, it's going to be 4.5, 5 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they want a 3-pound bird, it's going to be 5.5, you know, almost 6 weeks old.
Okay.
If you want a 4-pound bird, it needs to be 7 weeks old.
But it also depends on what time of the year, because we're outdoor farmers. So
right.
That
warmer weather,
a lot of things that change our model different times of the year, just because, you know, and that's half the battle of the last 4 years of working.
Poor farming skills will slow them down, too.
Sure.
If you let them run out of feed and water, if they get stressed by daily predator attacks, that'll also cause problems.
Stress is a huge factor in their growth.
Really?
One of the largest.
It makes sense.
Sure.
One of the reasons I wanted to do the Cornish cross, however, is because I'm moving those birds every day. Labor is a huge component of my cost. Of course, my costs have to pass on to the consumer. I wanted to keep my costs as low as possible. Mm-hmm. 14 extra pen moves for a 2-week slower bird.
Sure.
That translates to significant cost for me.
Uh-huh.
If we raise them on soy free, they're going to slow down anyway.
Sure.
So
now, do they tend to mature at about the same age? Would you say that with the Freedom Rangers and
So Freedom Rangers are 3 weeks longer.
Oh, 3 weeks longer. Mm-hmm. Okay,
roughly. You know, depending on what size you're going for, you know, we're uh-huh. pretty much do 9 weeks.
9 weeks. Okay.
You know, eight to 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be 21 extra pen moves.
Right. And where are they harvested?
Currently, we're taking our birds to Stockton, Grimaud.
Uh-huh. That's where most farms. People up here are.
Yeah,
going.
That's sort of where we're left to go. We don't really have many choices.
Only one.
Yeah. Up until, last year, Mark was still harvesting his birds on farm. I started Grimaud last year because of there's just a lot of factors. And when you harvest birds on your property, you can only sell them on your property.
Right.
Which means you can't go to a farmer's market, you can't go to a restaurant, and I had restaurant customers. So I wanted to be able to sell to them.
Thank you.
But yeah, so we drive, 2.5-3 hours to do that.
And then do you wait?
No.
For them? So you drive back, you come home, and then you go back?
Well, we're picky. We want them air chilled.
Uh-huh.
So, we
let's
feel that that's
that.
A big deal in the whole processing
that.
Thing.
The air chilling versus the other option is they go into ice water right away?
Ice water with a little bit of
chlorinated ice water, yeah.
But that's right. So how does air chilling work?
They literally hang them in a very cold room.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite a blast freezer, but it's right at the edge of that, and they circulate the air, and they bring them down to temperature as quickly as possible without being in a water bath, so that the meat doesn't absorb all that water.
Right.
If you've ever noticed your barbecued chicken shrinking on the grill, that's because it had absorbed a lot of water in that chill bath.
Yeah, and you're paying for that.
Sure.
Exactly.
That's right there in the
weight. If there's a per pound cost, that's right.
You pay for that. Well, and, the other, I lost my train of thought. Oh, I was just saying Grimaud Farms is great because not only do they offer the air chilling, but they actually eviscerate by hand, which is not an common processing method these days. They have mechanical eviscerators.
Right, a lot of
we walked the line and saw that they were doing as good of a job as we were, maybe even better. We sort of like being able to see that.
Not better. As good.
Well, and be able to see that care that goes into the birds because we put so much work into it. We want to make sure they, the final product has the same amount of care and work put into it.
So you take them down, and then when do you get to go back and get them?
They actually take them here. They bring them back to us.
They bring them
back.
They
deliver them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, to Petaluma.
There's a wonderful duck farm in this area, Liberty Duck Farm.
A Liberty Duck, absolutely.
Yeah, and he has twice weekly delivery from
them. Oh, perfect.
So we piggyback on his truck. And
Jim Reichert,
yes.
Good friend of Mouthful. We love Jim.
We're very grateful that he's such a nice person.
Yeah, he's great, and he's so supportive of other ranchers. I think that's really one of the great things that he brings to this community.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of people coming out with Slow Foods to the farm next month. So
cool.
He's got some big poultry day going on. That should be fun.
So let's move on to some of the other things that you have. Next in size, I guess, would be goat.
Mm-hmm. Well, even you might want to take a step back and go back to what is the origin of farming for us? Why did we go?
I was going to get
why
there
are
eventually.
We these second career farmers?
Yes, you were in the tech world.
I was.
What did
I
you
was,
do?
I was an operations and IT manager for an internet company.
Which one?
So,
you say which one?
It was a big, big search engine.
A really, really big search engine?
A really, really big one that everybody knows and uses.
Okay.
So, I did that for 6 years there, and I had my second child, and I had grown up a passionate salmon fisherman in Monterey Bay, and so my new plan for a different life with my family was to do a 6-pack fishing charter out of Bodega Bay, and that was the exact year that the Chinook run, the winter run of Sacramento River, Chinook just completely collapsed to 5% of its normal population in 1 year. So that was the year that I read Animal Vegetable Miracle and Omnivore's Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And in college, I had actually gotten a Bachelor of Science in Earth Systems. I had a lot of biology background and just a lot of environmental science and always had a passion for the environment. Wanted to do something personally about what I felt was the wrong direction our species was moving in, mm-hmm. in relation to our home planet.
Yeah.
And just became convinced that winter that agriculture and sort of where our food comes from was a big part of that. And also I had always assumed that agriculture was this zero-sum game, where if you were going to extract a resource from the earth, it was just that. If you wanted a food resource to come out, yeah, you were taking it from Mother Earth somehow. And, you know, Joel Salatin at Polyface has sort of shown everyone that actually you can build topsoil, you can sink atmospheric carbon, you can understand how different species of animals interact with grasslands and with forest lands. And you can manipulate and enhance these relationships in order to create actually a beneficial environmental outcome. Mm-hmm. He rehabilitated a totally farmed out piece of land, mm-hmm. Over decades, by managing grazing very carefully. So that was really the light, the epiphany moment, mm-hmm. for me was, you can do multi-species grazing and improve land while extracting a resource, for your community's benefit, mm-hmm. and it'll also be a lot higher quality and taste better, like the wild Chinook salmon, which has this wonderful depth of flavor because it forages in the wild. Its diet is a variety. It's got variety. It's eating some krill. It's eating some bait fish, and it's not just fed pellets, corn and soy, so
don't
that it tastes
eat
like pellets.
Farmed salmon. Oh, don't I? That's one
even
of the things.
Even if it's farmed in the deep ocean, they're using bait fish that's taking it out of the wild environment. And
I'm adamant about farmed salmon. I do not. It's just like, I will not eat an out of season tomato.
Me neither.
I could do a radio show on that one.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, well, you'll have to come. It's something I talk about and write about all the time, and I will not eat farmed salmon, period.
Good for you.
Good. So, and I saw a salmon farm once up in, it was in the mid-90s, and it was somewhere in northern Minnesota, I guess, the Iron Range. And there were these huge, deep pens.
Mm-hmm.
And too many fish in each one. And the whole thing created, I felt like something was going to happen. A flying saucer was going to land. I just felt like I was in some weird Twilight Zone episode, and it was not a good feeling.
Yeah, well, if most people saw how their food is raised and farmed in this country, they might feel the same way. But it's behind closed doors, and so people ignore it.
Yeah, they
do. We should definitely get to hog farming.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right.
Why don't we take a little musical break here on Mother's Day, and we will be right back. We will talk about hog farming.
Breath away. Mama, don't.
It is Mouthfuls. Michelle Jordan, thanks for sticking with us today. We are talking with Sarah Silva and Mark Felton of Felton Acres. Very interesting farming operation in southeast Sevastopol. Let's move on. Pigs, pig farming.
Seen the movie The Matrix?
No.
Oh, well.
I don't think so. Is that the one where they were really all living in a locker?
Yeah, they were all hooked up. It was all virtual reality.
Yeah, I was on a plane and came in and out of it.
Every human was actually just in this dentist's chair with all the wires stuck in their head. And actually the artificial intelligence that run the world was using them as sort of like power cells. The people were the batteries.
I didn't really watch much of it.
The artificial intelligence. But honestly, that is exactly what a modern day hog farm looks like. These animals live their entire lives in a box barely larger than their body. They give birth there.
That's one of the most disturbing things and something to talk about today on Mother's Day. Not letting an animal do what it wants to do, say in the case of chickens, run around and peck and search for grubs and scratch, but with pigs, not letting them birth like they need and want innately to birth, I find that so disturbing.
Well, I don't think they'd necessarily let sometimes human women birth that way necessarily.
They didn't let me, that's for sure.
But, a farrowing crate at the exact birthing experience to save the piglet's life, okay, that might be okay, but to have it live in the farrowing crate for its entire life, that's deeply wrong for an animal that's as intelligent as a hog is.
Yeah.
I mean, if we did this to dogs or horses, think about it. There would be a national uproar.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's okay with an animal that's even more intelligent.
I remember I was taking a class to Clark Summit Farms out in Tomales. And, you know, there were the birthing huts that were available to the moms if they wanted them. Mm-hmm. And out from a creek at one point came this big, huge mama. She was followed by, it must have been 9, 10, 11 little piglets following behind her. And she had not wanted a birthing hut. She gave birth down by the creek.
It's summertime, hopefully.
Late spring.
Yeah.
Late spring. But they were all running around, and they clearly had imprint. You know, they were following her wherever she went. And it was a happy place. Yeah. And I know that, now, my understanding is a lot of these really awful factory pig farms are on the East Coast.
Oh, they're everywhere.
Are they?
Yeah, okay. I think they're national. I don't think it's
because I know there's been some of the environmental disasters where lakes of waste or something have broken open and contaminated streams. I think that was like in Virginia or North Carolina.
It just takes a flood or a hurricane to undo the manure management plan that got them their use permit. Mm-hmm.
Why have we moved from how we use? Is this kind of factory farming, hog farming, relatively new? Seems to me like it is. Probably because the taste of pork
has
changed dramatically
since
the 70s, certainly, and I think really even the 80s.
I think a lot of all this farming started around that time.
Okay,
you know, I mean, what happened is we started having it, I mean, I believe it was Omnivore's Dilemma said it had a lot to do with the chemical fertilizer industries. You know, it changed a lot of the way farming was done.
Chemical fertilizers, really, we saw them introduced after World War II.
It started there, but that was with the crops, and then we started seeing it with the livestock in a later, you know, state. And, you know, when it happened, I don't know. I think the extreme to which it's going on right now, I think it's been the last maybe 30 years.
Yeah, and then we also had that thing happen that started in the 80s and really picked up steam in the 90s, where suddenly the right kind of pork was the pork with no fat.
Right.
And Julia Child, I was lucky enough to interview her. She was just hilariously right on the money when she would talk about how we've ruined pork. Mm-hmm. And pigs are supposed to be fat. They're not fat because it's not a pathology that they're fat. They're supposed to be. And so this, you know, like low-fat pork is just really scary.
Well, cholesterol somehow became the enemy of the heart due to some pretty shaky
science. Somebody made a lot of money on it.
It turns out to be a big old myth and it's very disproven now.
Yeah, I had the author, I think his first name is Michael. I can't think of his last name, I'm sorry. The author of Politically Incorrect Nutrition. It's a really brilliant book and he has a whole chapter on the myth of cholesterol. If you are still buying stuff about cholesterol, read the book. It's really good.
People seem to be aware that lard is the new health food.
Good. Well, there are some good
at least
news.
In West Sonoma County.
Yeah, okay. We're
are you
in
selling a lot of lard?
We're not, actually. No, we, it's not one of our products, really.
Oh, okay.
You know,
so
we
you're
don't
not
make
making
it a
lard.
Big deal. No.
We once in a while get some extra back fat, and there's certain customers that
because every now and then
we'll snap it up. Yeah,
every now and then, Brock Fulmer of Black Sheep Farm would have mason jars of lard. It's like, yes, give me some.
You need a certified kitchen to do value-added products, and we don't have access to
it. We already have so many things.
Can you sell the fat?
Yes, we have the fat for sale.
Well, you know what? If you can buy the fat, you can make lard yourself. It is not difficult. I've done it many times. So there you go. So how do you? How many hogs do you have? How do you farm?
Sarah, you want to take this one? You're
we have five sows right now.
Mm-hmm.
In the last batch, we did 42 piglets. And for us, that was actually our largest batch ever. And that
What breed?
The two breeds we have are the Berkshire, which is the pretty popular breed. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the rare breed Tamworth. And I believe right now we are the only registered Tamworth breeders in California.
Cool.
That may have changed since I last looked, but that was the case.
Mm-hmm. And what's it tell us about that breed?
Well, the Tamworth is a nice breed that's one of the older style breeds that do really well outdoors. And I, you know, as I've raised pigs since I was young, my father had pigs every year.
Which is
that
you grew up in Sonoma County?
I grew up in Sebastopol raising animals. You know, I'm not a farm girl because it was more of a homestead. You know, it wasn't big enough, but I did everything I could to get on a farm anywhere if it, you know, just to shovel manure, just so I could be around the animals. I, you know, my favorite smells was horse manure when I was a kid, you know. So anyway, we raised pigs. We raised the conventional pigs, Yorkshires, Duroc's. And when I started all this, doing it all by myself, I started raising different breeds, trying to see which ones were going to thrive outdoors, because what I had been taught was putting pigs in a small confined area, either on cement or dirt that had to be cleaned all the time. And I knew I didn't want that to be part of my process. It also involved, I wanted the pigs to be involved in the whole farm, you know, program, which involves them being the ones who help turn up the soil for us, you know, things like that. So anyway, I started doing a little research and getting a couple different breeds, and learned very quickly that I did not want to raise your Duroc's, and that the Berks were nice as far as the meat goes, but I didn't like their personalities.
Oh, tell us about that.
They're a little bit more sassy. Mark doesn't want to get into this. He doesn't agree.
I like my sassy Berks.
A hobby of mine is animal behavior. I really like to work with the animals and learn a little bit how they work. I feel like it makes your job easier if you understand them.
Sure.
And as much as I loved my first Berk female gilt, Minnie, she got hard to handle. I couldn't leave her in the care of anyone because she would tip them over on their backs, because she just, if she got upset, she would have her way. And in fact, we have one named Sweetie Pie, who is not as sweet as you might think based on her name, and she has a similar personality, but she's a good pick. You know, she has good babies. You know, she's just not as sweet, whereas we have our Tamworth, one of their names is Love Pig. You know, and the reason her name is Love Pig is because she's sweeter than heck. You know, she'll drop on her side in a minute to get a rub.
Oh.
And, you know, baby boy, who's the boar, Tamworth, is really just a big old baby. You
so
know,
did they conceive naturally?
They do. And they actually, they're known for being good mothers. That's one thing about the Tamworth. It's their docility, their hardiness outdoors, and their ability to farrow in a natural setting. They do a really great job with doing this little shuffle before they lay down, you know. But our Berks actually do a pretty good job too. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say they are worse mothers. Actually, I'd say they're all equally good mothers. Whereas, but I've heard other stories about Duroc's and Yorks, but I've never actually had a Duroc and York sow.
Right.
So
some
I can't
pigs
speak
will
for
just
that.
Go kind of plop down on their side, and you know, if there's a baby there, that's very dangerous. But you know, our pigs that we have right now, they all get down very carefully. And if something squeals, they get right back up really quickly. And so we don't need that kind of baby protection that a farrowing crate, might be designed for. Or even those shelters with the, like, piglet bar, you know. We haven't really needed that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and one thing to me that just seems intuitively important is the issue of conception. If I understand how things work in factory farms, you know, it's all through insemination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just unhappy, you know? That just,
I've done AI to get some purebred Berks because we only have a Tamworth boar.
Uh-huh. But it's like...
It's not so...
But as a general, as an exclusive practice, as only being that way seems... It just seems so removed.
I frankly think the problem is the fact that they don't ever get to see mud, and they don't
get to root.
Those are things that they really should do. I mean, if you read any of, I've just blanked her name. I want to call her Deborah Tannen, but that's the female, the human psychologist.
Oh, you're talking about the animal behavior person who made slaughter more humane?
Temple Grandin.
I mean, they've done studies in Europe
about, you know, brain activity from pigs and the different types of things that help improve brain activity. Something as simple as throwing them a flake of hay or straw every day helps with that brain activity. Yeah. I mean, these are very intelligent
animals.
They're
very smart, yeah.
The fourth smartest animal in the world. I mean,
really?
We take this and you just don't understand that until you've
been around
them.
You know,
just like the goat.
What comes before them?
Humans, primates, and dolphins.
Oh, okay.
And I actually can't think
Crows are extremely intelligent, too.
Right. Yeah. So. I'm not sure how they compare.
To get back to your question about management, we do them the same way as everything else. Right. We use electric net fences. They're designed a little bit differently. They don't have a wire quite so close to the ground. Mm-hmm. They're actually very short. Pigs don't jump very well. So
they're very easy
for us to manage. Sure, pick up a piglet in front of its mom. She'll jump over whatever's in her way.
including you.
Anyway, so and then... Pigs actually graze green grass. They will go out. We give them a new area, and they'll go out and they'll eat grass like it's a great salad. But they also love to root, and they will root their grass up faster than they will eat it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens in an area, then we just sort of make a new area with another set of electric fences and open it up, and they all go into their new area, and then we close that wall back up and make sure there's a nice hot energizer on it so that they don't just push the fence right over.
Yeah.
And then we just radiate them out on our pasture, and we let them rototill, and then we follow it with dry land pasture mix from LaBallister so that we can bring up the total digestible nutrients in our pasture by adding clover and all kinds of good stuff.
Do the pigs have any predators?
Piglets.
The piglets do,
I would
since
think.
We keep them with their mothers, they have no predators.
Right. How long do they stay with their moms?
6 weeks is what we're seeing. Really, we care more about the size of the piglet.
Uh-huh.
So if we see, you know, if it's a big litter, for example, and mama had to split her milk a lot, you know, we keep them longer, you know.
Mm-hmm, sure.
When I was a kid, everybody said 2 months, but, you know, some of the conventional farmers these days do 3 weeks. So, you know, it's really a farmer. And I think it's a litter-to-litter basis is more how we do it. Just like we do our grass. Everything, it's not set in stone. You know, if the grass looks good here, then we'll put them there. But if it doesn't, they got to wait.
Yeah,
but they stay
with them for a while is the point.
Some significant amount of time. And they actually get supplemental food from day three, which is, you know, fresh milk and eggs, too, from the farm. So
fresh milk and eggs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They have it pretty good on our farm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, some of the eggs come cracked and we can't sell those.
Right.
So, you know, we don't waste that. We give them to our pigs.
And the milk is from
our goats.
Dairy goats. How cool.
Mm-hmm. Sarah had a dairy operation.
I still have one, technically.
Well, yes, Sarah has
Before we put the farms together.
And was it a milk operation or a cheese operation?
Just milk, and it actually isn't even, we don't even have the license yet. I mean, it's something that's really, this is one of those things that's taken that many years to get going.
Yeah. And do you have a plan? Where do you see that? How do you see
the plan is to have a mobile raw milk dairy.
Right.
Which is not easy.
It's a brave pursuit right now.
And so right now, you know, the idea is because dairy goats need to keep moving, need to keep foraging, and we saw that as a primary need in the dairy goat industry. So the parlor that we've started is actually a trailer, a what is it?
A toy hauler travel trailer,
and we're building the dairy right inside it so that we can move it to new forage whenever necessary.
And then you'll sell your milk.
Right now it's just available as pet milk. And the animals are actually, I finally sort of cracked the code. They're on a sprouted grain, soy-free diet now, which is, and forage, which is hard because dairy animals pretty much need a lot of grain. Mm-hmm. And so we're not doing the traditional grain anymore with our dairy goats.
Great.
So,
And on that note, see how fast the hour goes when you're on Mouthful? We are out of time. So I want to run through just a couple things really quickly. Go to the website, Felton Acres, and you'll see the list of farmers markets, the farm open house, Thursday at O'Reilly Media, the grocery stores. And there's also, I think you told me this at the Sebastopol Farmers Market, there's one day a month or one period when you can get fresh rather than frozen chicken.
Right. The first week in June, we'll have it again.
First week in June. Mm-hmm. Right on. Okay. So is it typically the first week of the month? Or
it's
does it vary?
Not because okay. of the weeks, a number of weeks takes to raise the birds at this time. We've only done right one now. Month, one harvest a month.
Okay. So the first week in June, and does that mean
and
at
then
whatever
the third week
you're
in
at?
July right now?
The third week in July.
Mm-hmm. What we would really recommend is that people go to our Facebook page. While you're there, please like us.
Of course.
To receive our updates, there's a link there for an app called iContact where you can get on our mailing list, and then we'll make you aware of when we have fresh birds.
There's a really efficient way to do it.
Or meet any time of the week.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here, and best of luck. You just have a great operation. I'm going to make it to the farm one of these days.
Thank you.
I don't live that far from O'Reilly. So,
see you on Thursday
at
lunchtime.
Come have lunch with me.
I will pop over on a Thursday. So, thanks for tuning in, and be sure to check in next week. Wow, it will be May 20th already. I'll have a really yummy show for you here on Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat.